Well, yeah. All right. There we go. So it's rolling.
Oh, do you have the opening?
And then I'll mute the mics.
Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is, by utter unpredictable things, Brock Bittis.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes.
There we go.
And we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, the internet, all kinds of things.
Yeah, and do you want to lead with that thing that you were, since the internet and things that happen, you were saying that there's a fellow that... wrote something that you found intriguing.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. It's no secret by now that Steve Jobs, the saint and patriarch of Apple Computer, the deified
and the
man
myth
himself,
of progress, yeah.
Yes, has passed
we're
away.
Surrounded by his things.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, he died, and a lot of people are very sad about that, as well they should be. The strange counterbalance to that is that he was just a guy, and I guess what from all accounts, like, we don't want to talk bad about the guy, but apparently, like, he was a motivated person, I guess, putting it positively, which leads to
that's a nice way of saying workaholic.
Yeah, sure, and also maybe driven to perfection and less tact with his workers.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So,
yeah.
Anyways, so a friend of ours, Adam Caress, he was on episode 14 of the Sprocket Podcast, which you'll find at...
How the fuck do you do that?
I don't know either. I spent a lot of time writing things and putting them on the internet, so...
Anyway, Adam put something on the interwebs.
He did.
Yes. And it turns out Steve Jobs is a bit of a holy cow that we are not allowed to utter, so to speak, poorly towards.
Right.
Thing was, once you've come to the conclusion that the vast technological innovations of the last 50-plus years have had a far more negative than positive impact, it's hard to know how to feel about something like the death of Steve Jobs, especially with all the gushing tributes currently circulating. Jobs probably wasn't an evil guy, but his work as much as anyone else's, led to unprecedented mass breakdown and depersonalization of human communication and interaction. To me, anyway, that's his legacy. And I thought, he's got a point there. It's an important point.
Right, right. Yeah.
But it sort of collapsed into a bunch of people being like, what the fuck are you saying in the comment section? But I think it's a good quote. By Joe, for putting it on the internet.
Right.
Ironically.
That's right, yeah. Well, and we did it with Apple devices, so
yeah, exactly.
What can you do? I was, the thing that I put up was actually that technology to me, just in short, seems as though it's kind of like synthesizers in music, and you know, you can do synths really good, really well, and really, you know, well integrated into the whole thing, or it can sound atrocious, and you can replicate a really bad horn section, you know, with unconvincing attack and decay. So, technology is not necessarily bad, but how you use it ends up being kind of the deciding factor. So if we can learn how to do that with technology, if we can learn how to use it well and not sound like a Paul Simon song, then it may end up being all right. But anyways, thanks for bringing our attention to that.
Yes.
Yeah, and there we go. So we're starting off on a heavy note, and I guess we'll probably bump even heavier soon, but... first of all,
bump heavy.
Well, as we do.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. We're here with, first of all, Dave Foyt from PortlandEyes.com, and he's actually off mic right now. We have his mic swiveled around to somebody else. So
we'll let you talk later.
Just maybe, yeah. Yeah, you can hear him off mic there saying hello. We're here with Tyson Butler, who participated in the Occupy Portland thing.
Hello.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us, Tyson. He's going to be here for the first 5 minutes of the show or so and give us some of his thoughts, and we're actually going to wire in our friend David Hetty, who was also at the event. But before we do that, beer.
Oh, yeah.
And things to drink.
You bought it. You said you name it, homie.
Yeah. Actually, can we swivel this around? Because you were the one, Dave, that kind of told us which one to drink. So.
Oh, so this is a Hopworks Lager, which I've just had a number of times at Screen Door in Portland, and I enjoy it quite a lot. So.
Yeah, it's a good one. And I was just saying that I've spent $90 at Hopworks, and now the 10th growler will be free on my punch card, which I'm excited about. So, yeah. But I haven't actually even tasted it yet. I'll have to do that. I'm fighting a cold, so I'm drinking a tall, frosty glass of Emergency, which Brandon furnished for me earlier. So, anyways, that's where we are. But, yeah, maybe, Tyson, do you want to start telling us? And, yeah, we'll swivel the mic around again. I swear, someday we'll have enough mics for everyone in the studio. But at this point, maybe do you want to just briefly summarize what the Occupy Portland thing was? And I'm going to dial Hetty in now.
Sure, sure. Well, it's a lot of things, but we can go back to, what day was it? Was it Thursday or Wednesday when we had the actual Occupy March?
Thursday.
Was it? Yeah, it was Thursday. So Thursday, there was kind of a build-up into the march, starting with a lot of organizations. They call them general assemblies, and there they try and build consensus and make decisions towards what the group wants to do. And so on Thursday, we did get about 10,000 people there all told.
Woo!
Which was amazing.
And that's a lot of people to have in downtown Portland.
That, if you think about it, that is Pioneer Square bursting at the seams.
Yeah.
It's 10,000 people.
That's nutty.
It was. It was very cool. Cross-section of the demographics was amazing. A lot of different signs, a lot of different interests going into it, but I think a lot of solidarity with people that don't feel their voices being heard.
Oh, this is David's voicemail. Well, we're gonna probably drop him then, I guess. Maybe he'll call back. But
it's not the first time we've gotten voicemails, I think, on the air.
It's true.
Yeah. At least he doesn't say his phone number on the
voicemail.
It's true, yeah. They would have been public knowledge at that point. But you said a diverse assortment of signs, Tyson?
Sure, oh yeah. Ranging from all sorts of different interests. But I think if you were to nail something down, it would have to do with the economic and financial policies, as well as corporate involvement in campaigns and politics. So we met at Pioneer Square, and then we continued down to the park where the occupation is taking place. And so now they have a fully going tent city there with a library and a kids space and a garden and all sorts of things. I mean, it is an amazing place.
Right. So it's kind of
it's
like
a family friendly, safe for as long as the police let it be that way.
Yeah. It is quite an amazing place. I encourage people to go down there and, see for themselves what's going on, because it's nothing like I've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. A friend of mine that I just recently reconnected with, I think, was at the event in Seattle, and he was saying that he felt amazed by the amount of security and safety that he felt being kind of like in public with strangers, sleeping on a sleeping bag next to a lake, not feeling afraid, not feeling like these people are going to do bad things to me. They seemed like there was a sense of general goodwill. So would you say that that's kind of like the prevailing attitude here in Portland as well?
Oh, I would. Yeah. People are so happy with one another right now, trying to just build this mini community. And they have different jobs and different working groups. So one working group would be like the peacekeeping group. And so they're self-policing. They have rules, but they also respect individual rights. And everybody's just there altruistically. And really not want, they know that doing wrong things there would have a bad influence on their desires to be heard. So
they're protecting their platform pretty well then.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
How did you feel while you were there? Was there any emotion that was more prevalent than another?
It was so cathartic to be there, just because there was so much pent up political frustration. I felt like it was really great to get it out with like-minded people, and
scream of it.
It was, you know, and just being solidarity with people, like, yeah, we've kind of, we've had enough, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're going to scream at these buildings and, you know, someone's going to hear it. So,
right.
Well, I watched the live feed. I was sick as well those days, so I couldn't go. But the human microphone or whatever they call that was just amazing. One person yells and then the next ring of people yell and then the next ring.
Yeah, the echo chamber they call it. Oh, yeah. Someone knows some stuff. The people that organize these things are pretty... They got their stuff together. I don't know who they are, but it's like they've done it before.
Hmm. Hats off to them. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure they'll probably remain anonymous.
It was a tactic they started using in New York. It's probably been done elsewhere, but that was it was like a few days into it. They're like, oh, this works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty great. Stuff. Yeah, and that's simple technology. It's just the relay of ideas by willing participants. So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. And that came about, I think, because they couldn't have amplified sound
sure.
at that point.
Right, right. But that's a good way to work around that logistical problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably better and maybe taken better than bullhorns and megaphones.
Oh, it's so fun. These general assemblies, you're getting into the minutiae of democratic processes and really, you know... Relaying information is half as slow, but everybody is so connected and into it that it makes for a great time.
Yeah.
It was like real life Twitter.
It's like a
retweet.
A row of birds.
was there a fail whale? No, never mind.
It would be cool if there was. Yeah. I've always wanted to see a whale in person.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask Tyson, what do you personally hope will happen in Portland because of this event? Is there anything you're looking forward to the future in because of it?
Oh, that is so hard, and I think about that a lot. But
I mean, there's probably a lot of things. And
there are.
Maybe hard to put a point on, but...
It is, but it's going to take a long time. A lot of patience and a lot of bridge building with the community, with the churches, with all sorts of people, and it's going to be a long, long time.
Hmm. So just providing a platform, you think, like that's, you're hoping that the conversations will continue past this point?
It will. I'm very confident in that. My background's in political science and social movements, and it's an exciting time to be a part of the democratic process. But I also know that it is going to be a long time, and look forward to a long occupation.
There you go. Well, we do, as a matter of fact, occupy Portland at this moment, so... We will be around. Well, thanks for being here. And I didn't actually give you a thing, but we give you Tyson Butler, who is... I failed. Hang on a moment. Tyson Butler, who is...
Out hustling. Everybody else.
Glad you came in. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, definitely. So at this point, I think we're pretty much set to do our news headlines. So shall we roll those?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Do you want to actually possess and maintain the soundboard?
I would like to.
All right, fantastic. Drag the cables towards you.
You, if it's easier, you could do it.
There you go. You got it.
Do I? Oh, okay. Oh.
There we go. That's a whole tangle of cables. Good times.
No kidding.
All right. Well, here it comes. Our headline sounder is furnished by a local Portland band, Hurtbird. And it's somewhere on there, I think.
You keep moving it around.
I'm sorry. It's a yeah. I thought I put them in a logical order, but they yeah.
It's not on here.
It's not.
Oh.
Oh. Fantastic. Here come our news headlines for this week.
With the thrill of a brand new bike.
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the nightlight. Pedal just as fast as the leg will let us.
All right. First up from the Bell Stars, the Coloradoan posts a great article about the Fort Collins all-girl bike gang. Oh, they got featured.
They did, and I was trying to figure out if the Coloradoan is it a Fort Collins newspaper or if it's just a general Colorado news site.
That's what they call the governor.
I did. It's very possible. We have elected this year's Coloradoan. But they had a great comprehensive article, and we've had them on the show before. My knowledge fails me. I cannot remember which episode number it is, but they were on. They did a little Skype session. Thank you. They did a Skype session with us. telling us a little bit about how they do things. If you missed that, or if you want even more, there is some more of that on the internet. So anyways, the Colorado
just
one.
Just find it.
Exactly. Now we have a link on our website at thesprocketpodcast.com as well.
Next up from Bike Portland, Portland's transportation people work out a solution for a blocked bike lane. Oh yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, did you hear about this?
Yes, they jumped on it.
It was pretty great. Yeah, and Dave Foyt, have you you heard about this? Do you keep up with the Bike Portland blog?
It was the armored truck that was barking in the
exactly.
bike lane or something.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually used to work for that company, our Oregon Armored Service. Mm. I was first a parking meter emptying guy. So I'd go downtown at midnight and like pull change out of meters and put it into a big metal box, wearing sweatpants nonetheless. I got to drive one of those armored
that
trucks.
That is a dream, sir.
That's right. Exactly. It is alive in Portland. I got to drive one of those big, armored trucks out to the Dalles, I think one day covering for another guy. It was kind of freaky. They're big. And so
there's a building full of dimes somewhere in the Dalles.
I guess, yeah.
That's
so
cool.
We're just going to go out and grab a pallet of them and bring them back. Yeah, loose change.
Cool.
But yeah, it was cool. The problem was, first of all, that the armored truck was parking in the bike lane. And if any of you out there listening have ridden down Portland's Interstate Avenue, it's Interstate, right?
It was on Greeley. Greeley, but it comes that's right the, off
yeah.
of Interstate.
That's right. Yeah, it's out by the Adidas headquarters. And so you go downhill. On Greeley, it's a nice downhill, and usually it's a straight shot.
It's a really fun downhill.
Mm-hmm, just breezing your way down through Portland. But the way it worked out this time around, there's been this armored car that's been parked there at the same time approximately every morning, every week, on a regular basis, and blocking the bike lane. So, you know, the truck parks, guy hops out, waddles in with his gun, grabs the cash or whatever it is, and then comes back out, and then the truck leaves. But it's there for, you know, like 15 minutes or something like that.
A lot of waddling.
Exactly. Blocking the bike lane.
If he just walked, it would be three quarters done.
It's possible. But anyways, so I believe in conjunction with the Portland Police Department, the armored car company, and some other folks, a solution was worked out to where the armored truck could instead pull onto Adidas campus off of the right-of-way so that people wouldn't have to veer out of the bike lane into the lane of traffic in a place where, you know, potentially they would have either poor visibility or lack of control because you're going, you know, fairly fast down the hill
right.
and turning and maybe not being able to brake if you need to
and I think
quickly
it was
enough.
Sticking out into the car travel lane as well. So.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's not, well, actually, yeah, because that's Greeley. No, I'm thinking of Interstate with the Max. Anyways, it's a narrow lane of travel either way you slice it. But yeah, it was nice that they ended up working out a solution where the truck doesn't have to park on the lane of travel anymore. So hurrah for them.
Great.
Yeah.
Good to hear. I want to find my little sound effect now.
Oh, they're all on the right. Yeah.
Yay. Thank you.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm so excited. Again, from Bike Portland, TriMet plans to release an open-source multimodal trip planner.
Yeah, and this is exciting,
They're
too.
They're going to try out-Googling Google or something?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think... Yeah, and it's deep, man. Really deep.
You put that back on there. I'm going to keep hitting that sound effect.
It's a good time. It's the idea that you can not only plan how long it takes for your bus to get from one place to another, but you can actually do point to point directions. If you walk from your house and the bus stop is a ways away, you can factor in that time. If you want to, you know, shorten down the distance or not the distance, but the time you have to travel from one place where the bus lets you off, say, to where you're trying to get to. If you have a bicycle with you, you can figure out about approximately how long that will take. And as far as I know, there's never been a tool that does all of those things at once. Because Google has, walking directions, pedestrian directions, and...
mass transit and
transit
and bicycle.
Yeah, and by car or taxi.
That's it.
So,
I think they actually use TriMet's data for the transit planning in Portland.
Yeah,
TriMet has an open API for it all.
That's right. What's an API?
I can't remember.
Application Programmer Interface, I think.
Thank you, sir. That's what, yeah. I like having people smarter than me around to explain things like that. Yeah. But the data, anyways, is available to anybody who wants to use it, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that thing works out.
Woohoo! I'm just going to make that noise.
That's right.
From the Oregonian, a loud baby and its mom caused nothing but press after. That's a great way of saying it. After a bus operator kicks them off.
Right, right. And I think there was probably, you know, there were people talking and tweeting about this all over the place. But probably the most concise coverage of the whole thing is at the Oregonian, where they have a big list of articles about a crying baby and a irate bus driver. So
talk about a ballyhoo.
Yeah, no kidding.
That Max blog that some driver does, he just came out with, or she came out with a really good article on that. We'll get that link up there too.
Saying
like,
make sure you mark that down.
Yeah,
on your sheet,
yeah,
so I
will. Yeah,
thank you.
No, there was a story this week about a Max driver that like saved somebody's life.
Really?
And that didn't make the news.
Wow.
Yeah.
So really, the news is
only.
But
somebody steps out of line, it's like in a bad way, and it's like, crucify right. them, crucify them, That's crucify right. them. Yeah. Anyway,
and they do.
Yeah.
And they do.
TGW is like Pontius Pilate.
It really is. I was thinking I've lost my train of thought now. I got this.
Have some more emergency.
Okay, thanks. I got this visualization in my head of King of Kings, like 1960s depiction of like the crucifixion and Pontius Pilate.
Jim Caviezel is the bus driver.
Exactly. And then I just couldn't go any farther. Yeah. So anyways, that's where that one stops. But one of the things about the bus story that was so heartening to me was crying babies are tough. They're tough to deal with. They're loud, distracting. But I loved the idea of solidarity with all these other passengers, where the driver's like, you got to take your baby off the bus. And I mean, I probably would have done the same thing. If I was driving that bus, I probably would have been up to my limit and I wouldn't have been able to take it anymore. But same time, like, transit is for everybody. Everyone has the right to be on there, even screaming babies. And I was impressed by the other riders that said, well, if she has to get off the bus, we're not riding this one either. And like six other people get off the bus with her, just like in solidarity and in protest. So
that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty great. Good story.
Yeah. Next up, and finally, the Oregonian has an article about riders lobby for longer transfer times on TriMet, and the transit agency considers it.
Yeah, yeah. This is
3 hours.
Mm-hmm, yeah, because right now when you ride in TriMet, you can only have 1 hour from the time that
no,
you.
It's 2 hours.
Is it 2 hours?
It mm-hmm. also depends on the blessed graces of your driver. I've gotten like a 6 hour transfer before.
True enough.
It's awesome.
They tend to give them longer on weekends as well, I think, than on weekdays.
Right, because I thought that was the thing. It was like an hour on weekend or weekdays, 2 hours on weekends officially. Although, oftentimes, like you say, Brandon, it's just the grace of the driver, and I guess the luck of the draw, like when they do the little push to advance the little paper transfer,
right,
and make it longer and expose more numbers. So, yeah. But TriMet is thinking about that because they've had to cut service, and so one way they can compensate, if they're taking buses off the road, they're doing that to save money. But another way to appease people in the meantime would be like, hey, if you can't catch your bus, or like if these decreased service times actually make your life inconvenient, we'll give you more time. We'll make your fare last longer. So I like that idea.
Yeah. Well, especially when you consider it's from a lot of Portland, especially less economically capable parts of Portland. It takes a long time to get to downtown or to like, we're a wide city.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're wider.
Like, it can be an hour just to get from A to B. And so they're basically twisting your arm into, like, even if you just need to go cash your check.
Mm-hmm.
So it lets you do a one trip on one ticket.
We are wider than we are long. So
yeah. And
I actually put that one back on the soundboard if you want to use it. We're just going nuts with sound today.
Do we really have
on this Rocket Podcast?
Oh yeah, the Hitchcock. No. It's sound balance. Yeah. Well done.
Good times.
All right. And you gave me a closing on here.
Yeah.
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. For you are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
I love that sound piece.
Yeah. And anybody who knows and loves the Hurtbird song, I think I may have said this before, but I have chopped it up to death to make it into a snappy news headline thing. So you won't hear it that way, but you can't always come back and listen to us. So anyways, Dave Foyt of PortlandEyes.com, here you are, and you get a fanfare. So I think I have our standard two offerings. I've been hoping to expand those, but all in the time that I have allotted to do things. We have,
put Gong on.
Oh, no. Here, I can find it for you if you want.
Gong is fine.
Okay.
It will be.
In that case, we'll introduce you with a nice big ringing brass cymbal. We present to you Dave Foyt of PortlandEyes.com. Thank you, sir, for joining us here on the Sprocket Podcast.
Yeah, of course.
It's good to see you.
Good to be here.
I was just telling you, I think before we started recording, the succinct brevity of most of your posts is great. Like, I don't have time to read a lot of things, but I do like seeing cool things about bicycles. And you have a lot of posts that you put on your website that are just like a little, hey, other people bike and they do it well. I'm not alone. It's one of those things that it's nice to see. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's just a lot of sort of simple ideas are nice and transfer easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And
you don't have to write a whole essay on why disc brakes worked better in this instance.
Yeah.
Right, which has its place, but not on portlandeyes.com.
Take it to the forums, folks.
That's right.
Or just like, you know, look, we took a big fat pile of records to Everyday Music and sold them today.
Exactly, yeah. One of those things that I saw, there was that one.
Here's an alphabetical list of what I brought.
Yeah. I think we listed in our news segment one time your... I'm trying to remember which one it was. It was like people on bikes. And I think it was, there was the one where kids were being carried. Like there was a couple extra cycles and kids on trailers and that sort of thing. Just multiple people on a single bicycle. And it was just a nice little photo gallery of those. And it was pretty great. Mm-hmm. So how long has the website been around? How long have you been doing this?
It was sometime in 2008, I think, that I started it.
Okay.
It was largely at the motivation of Mark, who writes the Amsterdam Ice blog.
Ah, yes.
And was originally going to be hosted there, but it didn't work out. And
okay. Yeah. And Amsterdam Ice, I've been there maybe like once or twice, but I don't know a whole lot about it. What do they do?
Quite similar, actually. I mean, I think most of his posts are just very photography heavy and... it's just sort of like, look what people do with bikes in Amsterdam.
Right. That's nice. And it's nice to have a window into that because, I mean, there are a lot of us here, I think, in Portland especially, but anyone who's into bikes and bicycles as a viable mode of transportation, we all look longingly at Holland and say, we could be like that if we just tried. So,
yeah. It's surprising and impressive, and being there is even a whole nother different experience.
Yeah, have you been?
Yes.
Nice.
Once.
That must have been heaven.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, you'll have a street that's like the size of, let's say, Grand or MLK, but it's like, you know, four lanes two ways with a tram down the middle, and the crosswalks are just zebra stripes and then cycle paths on either side. And a cyclist will just be riding down the side and turn left across the road and everybody stops.
That's pretty intense.
Wow.
I remember there was actually an article, and we might have referenced this some time ago too, but there was some article that was talking about traffic problems in Amsterdam and like how cyclists might have been causing them. And it was kind of like maybe like the dark side to the rosy picture that we all paint. Do you remember that one at all?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember enough about it to talk about it, so I'll just mention that I've heard that. But yeah, it does seem like a culture that's so well accustomed to having bicycles around and having them on the roadway and doing that, it would be lovely. So
yeah.
In the meantime, Portland Eyes is kind of providing a window to that now. So, anyways, yeah, and you've grown up in the Portland metro area. You said you've been here most of your life. So
yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That didn't deserve that.
That was, bum, bum, bum.
Not yes. A migrating hipster. Oh, well.
Yeah. No, but, yeah, I grew up in the suburbs, and I've been living in Portland since, 2004 or 5.
Okay.
Like Portland proper.
There we go. Yeah. What drew you into the city itself? Was it education or school or just say, hey, big city?
Well, we actually lived in... my wife and I, in Vilnius, Lithuania for a year and coming back, just really wanted to be in the city, I think, more.
Yeah. That's where the mayor drives tanks over cars that are parked in bike lanes.
Very true.
Have you seen this, Brandon?
Walked down that street where that happened.
That's awesome.
I love how there's just this righteous celebration. Everyone sees it and they're like, oh yes, this is the best thing that's ever happened. I kind of feel bad for the guy with the car, even though, I mean, he was in the, you know, but what can you do?
Oh, it was staged, but.
Well, yeah. You know, now that I think about it, I should have assumed that was the case, but. Well, what can you do?
But still, the fact that he's, you know, making the point that these entitled automobile drivers are parking in the bike lanes and not the other way around, you
right.
know.
Right. We don't chain our bikes up to the center of the intersection or what have you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so when did you get into bicycling? What was your motivation there? Did you have an inspiring figure or a sexy bike that you wanted to buy or?
Not really. I mean, I think at some point I just sort of wanted to buy one and it was kind of a, you know, leisure aspiration originally. And I happened to get an Electra Amsterdam. And just one day thought, well, I might as well try riding it to work. And then I was like, I could get some groceries. And from there, it just kept going.
There we go. Groceries, vinyl LPs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have an article about going out of your way, about taking the long route?
Yeah.
That was sometime earlier this year, I think. I don't remember it, but I remember you were saying that sometimes it's nice to take the scenic route or not be too concerned about getting home fast and just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, well, that post actually was kind of, if I were talking about the same one, was actually just the fact that sometimes I have to, like, run errands halfway across the city and it's not all that exciting, but
there we go.
But yeah, I mean, I personally very rarely hurry anywhere and I try to arrange my schedule so that that's possible. And, I just enjoy life better that way. I mean, just for me personally.
Yeah. Did you consider yourself to be a member of the slow bike movement?
Sure.
Or do you just happen to bike slowly?
Sure, why not?
I haven't quite understood the whole...
what the hell is the slow bike movement?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think, well, in New York City anyways, I keep up with Bike Snob as well, and he, you know, he starkly comments about that from time to time. But I think, well, there's either the Lycra cyclist, like the Fred Speed, where you're, you know, you're going from one place to the other as fast as you can, without stopping for anybody else, without giving anybody else the time of day. And then you have the slow biker who... wears classic fashionable clothing, may not wear a helmet, carries things, baguettes, groceries, vinyl LPs, rides slowly, and doesn't necessarily care about the weight of the bike as much as someone who's going for speed.
They are counting sort of ounces.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, my bike weighs probably 45 pounds without anything on it.
Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome.
That is not a racing bike. It's something quite different.
You could drive over a car in Lithuania with that thing.
You never know.
Have you ever tried?
No.
Okay.
You can't really pop a wheelie to get up under the hoods.
Getting over the bumper is the first obstacle.
Torquing 22 pounds up in the air.
Yeah.
I can hop a short curb, but...
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. What size tires does it run?
I'm trying to think of what they are. Well, it has 28-inch wheels.
Okay.
But they're, I don't remember the exact size. I would guess an inch and a half, inch and three quarters, somewhere in there.
Nice. And you work with, is it Clever Cycles? Are they your supplier for certain parts and things?
It tends to be because my wife owns a Work Cycles, which is a Dutch bike, and mine's an old 1980 Raleigh, and they've just they're one of the few shops in town where if you take a bike in that has a full chain case on it, they don't look at you like, what the hell is that thing?
Yeah, sometimes it's nice just to I've gotten used to, you know, wrapping my legs with the little Velcro ties and keeping my pants out of the chain, but having like an actual structural piece that does that for you would be nice.
I think I'm ready to make that upgrade, actually.
Yeah,
I'm sick of it.
The other nice, I guess, benefit of that is I probably lube my chain like once a year.
Oh, right, because it's not exposed to rainfall from above.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess you'd have like water being kicked up from the street, perhaps. But
well, no, it fully encloses
it's a full
drive train. So,
oh wow. Yeah. Well, that's not a bad idea. Wow. I'm starting to have ideas. Do they come in plastic or are they?
Some of them are, yeah. I don't know how easy it is to fit one onto a bike that wasn't designed for it. But
Right. Probably kind of needs that.
I'll make a note of that. We're going to Google. I'm
going to figure it out.
I have the links list on this paper. I'll have the Google.
And they also won't work with derailleurs. So.
Well, never mind.
Yeah.
I got derailleurs on mine. So what can you do? Yeah, I've thought about from time to time, like how would you throw your chain into some encasing mechanism? I guess you could get a belt drive cycle. That'd be maybe one of the best ways to attack that problem. But yeah, have you ever ridden a belt drive?
I haven't.
I've been meaning to try one out. I've seen them. I don't know if I've ever ridden one, but that and like internal hub shifting, those seem like really good ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, internal hubs are. I mean, again, it's just kind of depends on what exactly you want from your bike. But if it's just a transportational bike, being able to for one shift when you're stopped is pretty handy.
Mm. Wow, is that a thing you can do?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't even know how they work on the inside, honestly. And that would be, wow, just to be able to stop and be like, well, I'm in my highest gear and just
click, click. It'd be horrible though for touring because... How hard is it to repair those things?
That's true. Yeah, it's less accessible. You'd have to carry more
tools.
Sort of
the Linux argument against it there. Mm-hmm. I can't fix it. So
that's a good comparison, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. It depends. I mean, it's more durable, but it's harder to fix.
Yeah.
Anyway.
One of the things that was really intriguing to me, Dave, was the as I titled it, promoting bicycling without being an asshole. Which is not how you phrase it on your blog. You were much more eloquent, but you want to jump into that one and tell us kind of what your thoughts were behind it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think with the blog, I just generally tend to, more than anything, show what I do with bicycles. I don't think that coming across as sort of moralizing or patronizing really is a good way to push people to change their behavior in general.
Right.
Trying to make them feel guilty for something they're doing or not doing, or toot your own horn because you do something that's nice and other people don't or whatever. I just really have no desire to do that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I guess the phrase is the old saying is like what flies with honey and vinegar and you get more one way than the other. I didn't say that very well. I don't remember how that goes. There we go. But yeah, it's like like the way you talk about something, the way you present an issue can either turn people onto it or turn people off to it. Kind of like the Occupy Portland thing, I guess, in some ways, like, you know, the way that you attack or approach a problem kind of maybe impacts how it's received and all that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just the most effective form of advocacy for anything really is just to do it yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I used to be the kind of guy that would just be like, you know, I'm going to say something controversial. Fuck yeah, it's fantastic. Look at my bicycle. I'm totally unlike you, you know, and realizing that, like, it just kind of comes off as unrelatable and it doesn't achieve maybe
and smug.
Smug, yeah. Smug is a good way to put it. Smugness is, it's not a winning quality, I guess.
It's neighboring douchebaggery.
Nigh unto.
Yeah.
And even
no, but the medium is the message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As the great Marshall McLuhan taught us. And so we've got to, yeah, like you can't be a dick about a good idea.
Right, right. So anyways, you explained that really, really well, I thought, to put it forward. So thanks for putting that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one that I saw recently was the, are others taking your right of way? And this is a really interesting one because it's just like the attitude that you go onto the road with is sometimes so varied, but oftentimes I think like so many of us go out almost with like a warrior's mentality as far as like how we're going to approach the commute and dealing with other people on the roadway. And, honestly, it makes me, it raises my stress levels quite a bit. So tell us about what your thoughts were. Maybe start with a high concept because I'm not sure if I unpacked it very well the way you stated it. But
So it was just kind of the idea that when we tend to have this attitude that if someone gets in front of you while you're traveling down the road, that they've somehow taken something away from you.
I violated.
And I think partly it comes from, you know, when we're driving automobiles, we're forced to be in single file lines. And if someone gets in front of you, then they've like cut in line, you know?
Right. Like they stole something from you
and
they're going to get the last slice of pizza in the cafeteria.
Yeah, right. There'll be no ice cream left.
And it's funny because there's not this sort of like limited resource at the end that we're all going for at the same time that, you know, but
that parking spot, damn it.
Well, maybe that's part of it. But, you know, the thing is that bicycle traffic and walking traffic, for that matter, is much more sort of flexible. And we haven't put these sort of restraints on it to accept that, of course, mm-hmm. bike lanes are usually, you know, only wide enough for one bicycle right. to ride down. But
potentially,
you know,
4 feet wide.
If you're riding down a road that has no bicycle lanes or, you know, like the path on the Hawthorne Bridge or something, it's perfectly reasonable for two or even three bicycles to ride side by side. And why not have this more sort of flexible traffic arrangement, I guess, because some people ride slower, some people ride faster, and if someone passes you, then whoop-de-doo, like, just get where you're going however fast you want to go, you know? Like,
right. It's kind of a, like, woohoo for you sort of thing.
I mean,
you're getting there faster.
Don't sweat the small stuff.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And they're all small bikes. Something like that.
There needs to be a slow clap. Button. You know, like, why do I need a button? I'm just going to... Okay,
I guess they're done. There we go. Now I'll pull that out and put it on the soundboard for you later.
Thank you.
There you go. Yeah. No, this actually happened to me on my commute home. Not yesterday because it was Saturday. Friday, it's Thursday. Towards the end of the week, I'm riding
Saturday.
Mm-hmm, yeah, exactly. it's the first time I think we've ever made a Rebecca Black reference on the Sprocket podcast.
Oh, no.
As far as I know, so. They're starting it all over again.
Hopefully the last.
Yeah,
no, indeed. Kidding. Indeed. But no, I was on Vancouver Avenue, which is the one going southbound. Mm-hmm. Williams goes north. So I'm going south. I'm leaving work, riding through town. And there was Vancouver Avenue has a lane of traffic and then a bike lane. And I believe there's parking on both sides, if I'm not mistaken. So there's a lot of traffic. It's about, 4 or 5 o'clock, people are getting out of work. I am kind of on my way and everyone else is, and we're kind of all traveling this big clump. So there's a truck, kind of like the Oregon Armored Service story. There's a truck parked in the bike lane. No, it was a TriMet bus. They were pulling over to a bus stop. But they're long. And so the end of the bus was sticking out into the bike lane. And so I couldn't continue until the bus moved. Either that or I would like swing out into the lane of traffic and go around the edge of the bus. But there was also a truck, like a pickup truck. Immediately about, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock on my, you know, from where I'm looking. So
in your blind spot.
Basically in my blind spot, yeah. So I look back, there's this truck there, and I know I can't swing out there. and then there's this Lycra cyclist right behind me. And so
that's the bigger threat.
Kind of, yeah. So I slow down. I put on my brakes, you know, because like the bus is like almost there, almost in front of me. I'm almost about to hit it, so I need to stop. I put out my hand to signal like maybe I can swing out into the lane of traffic. The truck's there. Truck doesn't look like it's going to stop. It's going to keep on going fast, and so I kind of have to defer to that. And meanwhile, behind me, as I'm slowing down, Fred cyclist behind me is like, "Go, go, go, go!" And I'm like, "What? What?" I'm doing the safest thing I can possibly imagine. But he ended up whipping around me and I think squeezing between the bus and the truck. And no, he ended up being okay. But then I did the thing which I call the grudge race, which is like after I do what I think I'm supposed to do, which is the safest and most legally obliging thing, I then attempt to prove that I can still get to the same place that he's going.
He's going to hit that same
in the
stop
same
sign.
Amount of time. And in fact, we did so. I didn't say anything to him.
When it went green, did you say, go, go, go?
That would have been one of the best. Nah, I wish you'd been there to help me.
Well, again, once we can return to your point, how to promote bicycling without being in a... I guess he's already on a bicycle. He's just not enjoying it.
How to promote slow bicycling would be, maybe. But no, anyways, it just like the whole idea is like I had that thing of like, oh, this guy's going around me. He took my dignity, you know, when he zipped past me in his fluorescent green. So, yeah, I think it's something what you're talking about, Dave, is something that I've been working on in my head for a long time. And I think I'm getting better about it. But it's there in all of us, and we kind of have this innate sense of ownership about like what we're doing on the road.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it's something that, I mean, most of the things I write about are stuff that sort of goes around in my head until I feel like I can express it reasonably in words. And so that's, you know, it just happened to get to that point where I kind of understood what I was thinking about at that point. But it's been, you know, kicking around in there for years, it's
been,
probably.
Yeah, percolating. It's been creating a, it just needed to get out,
yeah,
I guess.
So, yeah, I mean, it's something that I had to deal with as well, as, you know, being okay with not being as fast as everyone.
Yeah. Have you ever participated in a grudge race?
Yeah, probably.
Brandon, have you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there we go. So, we're all on the same page here. We know what's up.
Yeah.
I've certainly felt satisfaction in having someone fly by me and then just sit at the stoplight for, you know,
yeah, that's
3 minutes.
Mostly it. I have that more with cars. When they accelerate to get past me, but they get to the stop sign or the stoplight, it's like, you accelerated to a stoplight?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much the same thing as if you're in a vehicle or something and you're gunning your engine and that sort of thing, and then rolling forward 5 feet and then gunning your engine again. And
I do try and see if I can get my the tip of my bicycle into the crosswalk on the other side of the street from a stoplight before the car can.
That's actually pretty good. You'd have to have really good acceleration.
It's about 50-50.
Okay, yeah.
I try really hard.
How are your knees doing?
Oh, not so good these days.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Thankfully, not everyone floors it out of the stoplight.
Good thing, yeah. I remember they taught me in school bus driver training that you're supposed to actually wait after the signal turns. You're supposed to wait like a kind of a beat as you're looking both directions, and then finally go.
My dad is the only person I've ever seen actually wait at a complete stop. Like, it's not like start accelerating and then look.
Mm-hmm.
He's still got his foot on the brake. He looks both directions, and then he goes.
He's a very responsible guy.
Evidently, yeah.
I'd love to be on the road bicycling when he's around sometime.
You could get your tip of your tire into the crosswalk before he would.
I could win the grudge race.
Have looked to the right. Anyway.
Yeah, well. Good times. I appreciate you putting the point on that. I was wondering about, you know, there's the split between what they call vehicular cycling or the vehicular cyclist and their mentality and people who demand infrastructure, because they're kind of, I mean, they're not at odds with each other, but they're different philosophies of how bicycles integrate onto the road. So you've got the vehicular cyclists who say, we'll share the road, we'll be in the lane with traffic, and we don't need any bike lanes. And then you've got people who say, we want infrastructure. And it seems like you were saying the infrastructure is kind of the thing that gives us the mentality that someone's taking something from us when they pass us on the road.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, well, but I think more the way that the infrastructure is set up currently than anything else. Not so much that, you know, infrastructure as a concept is the problem, but just the way it is now.
Right. Yeah, we've all kind of been molded. We've been shaped into this mindset that we have.
And I think, you know, in terms of vehicular cycling and infrastructure, I think vehicular cycling offers useful tools for riding on the infrastructure as it is currently. But I feel like a lot of the people who are really adamant about it have almost sort of given up, in a sense, in that they're like, this is the way it's going to be, so we'll just deal with it.
Right, right. It's kind of a giving up now and feeling better.
And, you know, while I think it does offer some useful tools, I would prefer to see that streets change.
It would be nice. It would be nice to have a friendlier environment, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about, you had mentioned My mouth is gone again. Bicycling in the rain, you were saying, is something that you kind of wanted to talk about, or you have some experience with, and ways of dealing with that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that I think keeps a lot of people from riding a bicycle, and
keeps me from riding a bike some days.
Yeah, and some days there are certainly reason for that. I think, you know, I work at OHSU, and I ride down to the South Waterfront area every day, and when it's raining there, you know, I mean, there are parking spots for some 200 or 300 bikes down there.
That's pretty fantastic.
sunny days and days where it's notably rainy, it looks considerably different.
Right.
And though I have been rather impressed this year so far that it hasn't changed much. You know, I think we think of Portland as a particularly rainy city, but it's really surprised me personally, riding year round, how few days of the year I actually get really drenched out riding.
Yeah.
We have the highest of not inches of rain, but days of measurable rainfall of any comparably sized city in America.
Right.
That's our thing.
So it's just drizzly all year round.
Yeah, it just sort of sputters.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just getting back into that season now.
Yeah. And, you know, different factors play into it. Like, my wife wears glasses, and that makes it notably more difficult because your glasses get wet, and then it just looks all sparkly, and you can't see anything, you know. But,
a kaleidoscope.
Yeah, something similar, I'm sure. But, yeah, you know, in terms of, like, rain gear and stuff, like, I wear this to work most days, and it's just fine. I mean, you know.
T-shirt, jeans.
Or wool socks. Whatever, a suit or whatever I'm wearing, you know. I mean, I sometimes wear slacks and a button-up shirt or whatever else. But, you know, it's just and maybe I'll have, you know, 15 minutes to sort of dry off a little, but it's not the end of the world. You know?
Right, right. And wool dries out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Acrylic does. Cotton tends to stay wet a lot longer than anything else does.
Yeah.
But, I've been amazed by it. Sometimes the times that I try to wear a rain jacket, and it seems like I would be better served just to kind of get a little damp and then dry off when I get there, as opposed to kind of put myself into a sweat balloon and then get out of it afterwards and then try and dry off.
Yeah, so. I certainly get sweaty sometimes more than wet from the rain, just because it's kind of humid out.
Yeah, and wet from outside is probably better than wet from inside. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Indeed. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's not quite the intimidating, horrible experience that I think a lot of people think it might be.
Right. We just need to change the way we dress. Maybe. Or just the way we think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because, you know, like, there was I forget what it was recently. It was like a survey on walking and just, like, people's walking habits or whatever. And all of the questions were sort of structured in a sense of, like, if it's not raining, how much do you walk? Implying that, of course, you wouldn't walk if it's raining.
Right, right.
And I was just like, what does that have anything to do with it? Like, if you need to go somewhere, you need to go somewhere, you know? It's exactly. Not like... Yeah.
No, it's targeting leisure walkers.
Right, of course. But
if it is raining, how much do you walk?
It's the silliest thing in the world as a non-car person. It's like, for me, I'm like, why don't I want to go for a walk? I'll go for a stroll with someone.
A stroll implies you're wearing something classy like tweed or something.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yeah.
Which I was last night. My wife and I went for a stroll. You know, I was dressed to the nines.
We need to go from having the naked bike ride. We'll just have a naked stroll. That'll be disgusting.
Because
it's no longer funny. It's no longer funny. It's just a naked bunch of naked people walking down the streets.
That's true. That's
it's not
that's,
like awkward bicycling. Mm-hmm. How do you sit on that seat that way?
Anyway. Also, I came up with the Occupy Portland march the other day. I was thinking that, you know, it's interesting that, Southwest Broadway being blocked off for a couple of hours is kind of more of a major cultural interruption than people riding bicycles around naked.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. It's kind of funny. Yeah. Well, hey, we should probably get to we got some feedback, some listener mail and that sort of thing. Brandon, why don't you ready the mail sounder? I'll talk about the upcoming shows. We've got next week, it's the 16th of October. Jill from Zenger Farm is going to come in and tell us a little bit about what they do over there. I'm kind of excited because this is the first time we've talked about something other than bikes for many episodes. So good times. I just this week confirmed October 23rd, Dr. Jeff from Twitter. He talks a lot.
Love Twitter.
No, he's not. He doesn't work for Twitter. He tweets a lot about transit stuff. He's one of the Portland Afoot favorites. And so, anyways, he's going to come in and tell us some transit
You're
stories.
My favorite child.
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm prepared for Job.
That's right. And then October 30th, Ethan Seltzer from Pedal Power, we're finally going to get him back, and we're going to talk to him and give him the full hour he deserves instead of, like, you know, 11 minutes of our computer is falling apart, that sort of thing. And then, let's see, November 13th, Amos Hunter from Bike Temple. He's going to come in and tell us some stories as well. And I need to talk to him about the nature of those stories, because I don't know what they're about, but I'm looking forward to meeting him and seeing him again. Yeah, so, also, our 50th episode is coming up soon, so we're gonna have a drinking show, and that'll be somewhere in between those. Brandon, you and I will just sit here, and we don't have enough time to bullshit together about just life in general. So we're going to do that, and we're going to drink whiskey, as we do.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So that'll be our 50th episode, and we may have some audio sound to you know, go back and reminisce with. Our mailbag.
You've got mail.
Yes, we do. We got a donation from Matt in Portland, and he actually lives like, 40 blocks or something from us, just down Duke Street and a little bit farther north. So anyways, he gave us some money and said, "Your podcast makes 45 minutes of my work week much more enjoyable." Actually, some of them are over an hour, Matt. So if you're interested, you know, maybe 45 minutes is all he can spare. But we haven't met yet, he said. I asked him if we bumped into each other around town. And he says, "Portland is small sometimes. I'll stop you and say hey when I see you. Cheers." I was going to say, look for the guy with the big beard wearing plaid. But then I realized that... that doesn't narrow things down too much here in town. So we got an iTunes review. Dave from Denver says, "Brock and Brandon do a great job. I've never been to Portland, have no plans to go there, but if there was ever two guys that might change my mind, it's the boys with a Z from the People's Republic of Portland. Keep up the good work." So
you have a Z.
We do. We've been declared to be boys. So that's awesome. But let's see here. I was going to try and pull up. I know on Facebook we had a couple of questions, and people wanted you to talk about certain subjects in particular. But
goodness.
Yeah, I got to see if I can find them. Talk amongst yourselves for a moment.
You're a loud clicker.
I do. I click with authority.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So
that shows up on the mic.
This is Patrick down from California. He says that Governor Brown recently vetoed the 3-foot bike/car passing law, citing concerns by law enforcement and creating traffic. I think we can all agree that slowing and calming car speed should occur for safer streets. What are your thoughts on this veto?
I would certainly agree with the statement that slowing and calming traffic is important for safety. I mean, it's interesting looking at statistics where, like, at a collision of a car and a person walking at 20 miles an hour, there's like a 5% chance of death. At 30 miles an hour, it's like 20%. At 40 miles an hour, it's like 90%.
So it just kind of incrementally goes up.
Yeah, I mean, very quickly. And so, you know, plus the fact that when everybody's moving faster, there's more chance of a collision in the first place, because if someone, you don't see somebody walking across the road at 40 miles an hour, you're a lot less likely to be able to actually stop in time.
Right. Your response time is just decreased quite a bit.
Yeah. Hmm. So in terms of the 3-foot passing law, we have one here and it's pretty much completely unenforced, I think. So I'm not sure that that's the most important thing in the world, but
right. Maybe like behaviors need to change before legal things.
certainly it's not a bad idea to bring the idea of passing people on bicycles safely to the sort of public awareness, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And then, Logan Smith actually said, ask him to compare and contrast European cycling habits and those in the United States. Also, he wants me to say the name Joseph Rose and see what you do, but we'll just gloss right over that.
Yes, good idea.
European cycling habits?
That's could be almost a whole show in itself.
It really could, yeah. Answering this in a couple minutes is probably more than we can bite off, but...
I think, in general, it's just... it tends to be a much more kind of normal thing. Like, people don't think of it as unusual at all it's just kind of, oh, you ride a bike some places, okay.
And it's not, you're not one of those weirdos. You're not like a Fred or a tall bike. Or, not that there's anything wrong with either of those.
Right. I do like tall bikes.
Yeah, but I like tall bikes too.
But you know, also,
they have a stigma.
Also, people who ride bikes don't think of it as anything unusual either. And it's just, you know, like I need to get here to there and this is the best way to do it. So that's what I'm taking. Right. Just like you might take a train for the same reason or whatever.
Right. And as Google directions will tell you, you know, you save a certain amount each time you do that as opposed to driving. So
which is one of the best things they've ever done.
It's pretty fantastic. It's nice to know that.
I feel so smug.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it certainly took me probably less time getting here by max than it would have to ride my bike the probably 10 miles or something.
That's
I don't know.
True.
It's quite a while.
Yeah,
quite
definitely.
A ways.
There's a lot of stoplights between here and there. I oftentimes on my commute home pass through your neighborhood, give or take. And yeah, it's,
I used to work like 10 blocks from there. It's 7.5 probably.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Light rail is a nice thing.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, Dave Foyt, thank you so much. Once again, your website is portlandize.com. It's Portland with an I-Z-E on the end, .com. And
like boys.
Like boys, kind
sort of
like that.
But then with an E at the end.
Right, an I before the Z. Yeah.
Except after
Portland.
Oh, fuck it. Except after Portland. Well done.
Do you want to throw our closing music there? We'll end this little show here. Thank you all for joining us here at the Sprocket Podcast. It's thesprocketpodcast.com, where you can find our blog and all of the links to things that we talked about tonight, as well as any other show. Feedback about the program. Please tell us what you think. Send us suggestions for anything we should talk about, guests, drinks, etc. It's thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. We've got a message line. It's 503-847-9774. Ryan J. Lane provides our theme music. He's on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Hurtbird provided the headline sounder. You can find them at hurtbirdmusic.com. Well, this has been The Sprocket. I'm Brock.
And I'm Brandon.
And that was
Dave.
All right. We will see you all later on. Good night and good luck.
Woo!